to Bubblegumkin Podcast. My name is Kimberly Andrus, and joining me today is Jimmy Orchiaga. Today's episode, we are going to be talking about mental health with Jimmy and how it's affected his life personally. Jimmy is an established fashion stylist slash creative director based out of New York City, who recently published Chronicles, The Awakening, and is the persona of drag sensation of Miss Lady. Hi, Jimmy.
Hey, Kim.
How are you feeling today?
A little nervous and really excited at the same time. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. I'm a little nervous and excited at the same time as well. So it's nice to know that we are feeling the exact same emotion. But why don't we just get started?
Okay.
We have a very exciting episode for everyone, and hopefully it's able to touch a lot of people's souls and lives, right?
Mark.
So why don't we get started with your story?
All right, so on February 18th of 1981,
of course,
an angel was bestowed upon this world by the name of Jimmy Giovanni Orchiaga. No, I'm playing. I was born in 1991 to two parents. My mom was 16 and my dad was 18, mm-hmm. which I was a little problematic on my dad's side of the family. But they had me at a very young age. They stayed together for about 2 years. They mm-hmm. had my little brother, Jordan. And then they split, and then my childhood became a little interesting.
Okay.
Like, it was, like, back and forth between, like, my mom's house and my dad's house, and it wasn't, like, the most pleasant, but thankfully I had, like, my grandparents who became, like, my sanctuary, and they, like, were a big part of raising me.
Right.
And gave me, like, stability and stuff like that when I really didn't have that, like, elsewhere. And yeah, but, like, growing up was incredible. I grew up in, like, a huge family with, like, a ton of love. And, yeah, like, I didn't even know until I was, like, 26, 25 mm-hmm. that during a conversation I was having with my aunt that I realized that we grew up, like, really poor, actually.
Okay.
And, yeah, and I thought that we grew up kind of rich. Like, mm-hmm. every Christmas we had, like, so many toys. There was always people at my house. Like, we were always having get-togethers. And I was just, like, raised with so much love that I didn't really feel like I needed anything else. And in school, I kind of experienced the same thing. Like, I always had a bunch of friends, and school to me was very enjoyable.
Right.
And, yeah. And then in high school, when I was about 15, is when I ended up coming out. And I'm so thankful that it was, like, a positive experience. Like, my friends were super accepting. My family was really accepting, and in high school it even actually made me, like, a little popular, mm-hmm. which I'm super thankful for. And yeah, in high school I discovered my passion, which was, like, designing, because I had an amazing teacher who really went above and beyond for us. And from that fashion class, I started doing fashion shows with, like, t-shirts and skirts. And I had a bunch of, like, my friends who were a part of it. Kim, you were one of them.
That was the face. Let's get that right.
The face of Jimmy Cito.
Uh-huh.
And no, yeah, and, like, I started doing fashion shows around Vegas, and the fashion shows turned into art festivals, and when the art festivals were at, like, their peak, which it sounds kind of crazy, like,
yeah,
really
I kind of feel like you kind of started a lot of that here,
uh-huh.
which was kind of awesome. You've won so many different types of awards as far as fashion goes here in Vegas.
Yeah, it was cool. It was cool, like, with Caesar's Palace,
right?
Like, Best New Fashion Designer. What's up? No, it was a really fun and exciting.
It was, like, an exciting
chapter,
time. Yeah.
You know?
The start of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, like, really awesome. And then you're from Vegas, obviously, which
yeah.
you made your move to Los Angeles, and mm-hmm. then that brought you to New York City.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us that transition from Los Angeles to New York City and how all of that was for you?
Okay. Well, it all kind of started when I won the Las Vegas Best New Fashion Designer Award.
Uh-huh.
Because two of the prizes were I got to assist two fashion stylists.
And were they based out of Los Angeles or?
One was based in Vegas. The other one was based in New York.
Okay.
And the one in New York, I really didn't like her at all. Like, we didn't click at all.
Uh-huh.
But the one that was based in Vegas, me and him, like, hit it off.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, he was like, well, do you want to be my assistant on shoots? And I was like, well, sure, because that's a great way for me to get, like, my clothes into the magazines. Like, and
you're
I'll
put
be
in
able
the
to,
door.
Like, yeah, like, yeah. build it up. And, yeah, so I started assisting him. And then I worked with him on a bunch of jobs, and then he had a shoot that he couldn't do, and he's like, do you want to style this? And I was like, yes, I'd love to style it. And I did it, and then I just fell in love with it.
Right.
Because it was a way for me to tell a story. Like, mm-hmm. like for me, when I fell in love with like creating fashion shows and these collections, it was more because I could tell a story, just like McQueen did. Like McQueen, every time he would do a show, there was like a reason behind everything. There was a story, like the fashion shows told a story, and it was just like creating this fantasy yeah. to live in, you know? And that's what fashion styling was for me. It was a different outlet. And it was a lot faster. It was like faster fashion for me. Where if I was like designing a collection, it would take me like 3 months to sew it. Mm-hmm. Like styling, it took me like a week to prep it, a couple hours to shoot it, and then in a couple weeks I had images for the story, and then it was like on to the next project.
Yeah.
So which I really loved it. And no, so during this whole process, I always told myself like I'm gonna stay in Vegas. Like that's it for me.
You just wouldn't venture out.
No, because I had my family and I was like so close to them mm-hmm. that I was like I could never move away.
You were just so content and comfortable here.
Uh huh, 100%. And then during this, like I auditioned for Project Runway.
Yeah.
And they were so mean.
Really?
The meanest. Like I like took all my clothes and I was like so excited. I went to LA and I went to this casting call. And I think like in the casting room, it was like me and like four other people in there. Mm-hmm. And I ended up seeing those four other people on Project Runway.
Oh, wow. Okay. Uh-huh.
So I was sitting there and, well, this wasn't until after uh-huh. the casting. And then I was sitting there and I was like really excited because I was like, oh, dang, I think my like clothes can like stand up next to these people.
Yeah, of course.
And I went in there and I was like super stoked. And like one of the guys like won a season prior and he mm-hmm. was sitting in the front row and everything. And I started showing them my clothes and I was really excited. And then all of a sudden they just like trashed it.
Oh no.
Yeah. They were like, you know what? Like we like your construction, but we don't like your colors or we don't like the patterns that you chose. And it's just like, they're like, we think you need to actually go to school and take some time and like discover yourself
and
more
then
before
come
you come
back. Yeah.
And I was like just destroyed after that because I was like, damn, I'm really like not good enough, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like after high school, I didn't want to go to college. So I was like, well, if I don't go to college, I'm going to like invest all my money.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to work my ass off and I'm going to make this happen, you know? And like Project Runway, I was like, this is going to be it. Like I'm going to get on TV and they're going to discover it and it's going to be like my dream is going to be
seen. It's just going to unfold.
Uh-huh. So then after that, I was like, it was a really big blow because it was like, damn.
Everything just brought you back to reality.
Uh-huh. And it was just like, you're really not that good. You know, like this is a dream. Like the people who make it go to college and all this stuff. And I was like really low. And then during this time too is when I ended up finding out that my grandmother, who's like my idol and like came from Cuba, brought her the whole family over. Pretty much, like, everybody who is on, like, my dad's side of the family has, like, lived in her house. She took care of them. Like, when shit was going bad, like, she was like, come on over. We're going to make it right. We're going to get
it
together.
Yeah, we're going to make it better.
Like, she was just, like, the matriarch, yeah. You know? And during that same time, I ended up finding out that she had Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. You know, like, the early stages of it. And that hit me pretty hard. So once I, like, discovered styling, I was like, okay, this is like my opportunity because the two people that I was like working with the most, which was this photographer mm-hmm. and this makeup artist, they were like, we're moving to LA. And I was like, well, I already had Molly and Eric, who are my best friends. They were already living in LA. I was like, I think this is my time to go.
To venture out and learn more about yourself and what you can accomplish.
No, for sure. And it was disguised in the, I'm going to pursue work, but I also wanted to run away from like,
from everything that was going on
with my grandmother and everything. And I was like, I need to start like a new life kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I moved to LA and it was really hard at first because I had never been away from family and stuff, but I had Molly and Eric there to like lessen the blow. And like, we got really close and LA was like kind of weird at first because mm-hmm. it's a really hard like place to like live and try to become established in,
right.
Especially like socially with friends.
And there's so many people.
Really though.
Yeah.
And it's very car centric. So you get into like your car, you go to your destination, you get back in your car, you come back home.
Right.
There's no really like forced interaction. Mm-hmm. So it's a little difficult, but yeah, we had like Becca there. She was there before I moved out there. And yeah, I had like my little family. And then while I was in LA, I found Christ as well.
Okay.
Which that was like a really beautiful story. because I had never really grown up religious with my family or anything like that. And I found Christ, and that kind of like changed like the direction of my life, because I was like, I was already dealing with depression. I didn't really know that I like had it just yet. But I was like drinking, going out, sleeping around, doing things that I know that I shouldn't be doing and that wouldn't produce like fruit or happiness in my life. So Eric and Becca were like, hey, one night, it was a Saturday night. I was like going out and they were like, hey, tomorrow morning, we're going to pick you up and you're going to come to church with us because we don't want to come back to the valley to pick you up for lunch.
Right.
So I was like, okay, dope. Like, let's go. So they picked me up and nothing. We went to church. I was probably like hungover coming home from like some random dude's house. Like, it was just like
a mess. And you really needed to be there.
Yeah, girl. So we went to church and like the sermon was like whatever. I was there, but I was like checked out. I was like, this isn't speaking to me at all. Like, I'm ready to get out of here. So the sermon was like kind of whatever. And afterwards, they were like, if you would like to pray, you know, and just like take communion with God, you could come to the front, you could take the body of Christ, drink the juice or whatever, and you could pray with him and have like your moment while they like worship and stuff. And I was like, well, I'm here. You know, like, let me try it.
Let me take advantage of this opportunity.
No, exactly. So I went up and I started like praying, and I was just like, for a second, I was just like praying for my family. You know, like the prayers that everybody does, like, oh, pray for my mom's health, my grandma, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then in the middle of it, I was just like, hey, God, like, I was like, let me take my walls down here. You know, like, there's no point for me to just give this like superficial prayer. Like, let me be honest about it. So I was like, hey, God, like, I'm really not happy, and I don't think I've been happy for like a very long time. You know?
Started spilling out your heart to him.
Exactly. And I was just like, I was like feeling a lot of guilt because I left my grandma back home. And every time I would go back home, it would get worse, like the Alzheimer's. And I was just like, if you take care of her and like take the Alzheimer's away and like look over my family and like look over me and my friends and everything, like, and if you give me a sign and show me that you're real, like, I'll like devote my life to you. And I want to, you know, I want to see how life can be with you in it, you know? So whatever. So I prayed a little longer after that. And then I was wrapping up my prayer and I was getting ready to get up. And then as I'm getting ready to get up, this like random girl like grabs my hand and I'm like, why are you touching me?
Yeah.
You know? And she's like, can I pray for you real quick? And I was like, all right, sure. You know? And she started praying, and literally when she started praying, she started talking about my grandmother. And like, I even get goosebumps still because she was just saying things that were like too specific, you know? Sorry.
It's okay.
Mm-hmm. And she just started talking about like her health and that like the family like needed her and a lot of things, you know? And I was like, oh shit, this is like God telling me that he like heard me.
And speaking to you.
Speaking, you know? Like affirming. So after that, I was like, oh shit, God is real, you know?
Yeah.
So after that, like, my relationship with God, like, flourished, you know? And it was beautiful. And my relationship with God, I wouldn't say is, like, the typical relationship. Like, I would talk to God, like, I would talk to my homegirls, like, what's up? Like, what's good? You know, like, hey, today was hard, you know? Or, like, I'm talking to this guy right now, you know?
And I think that's kind of maybe what made it easier for you to even talk to him, too, and reach out to him and let him know that you do appreciate him and you just have strong faith in him.
No, for sure.
Right.
Because, like, it wasn't as if he was, like, this, like,
just a person you go to.
Yeah, he wasn't this almighty, like, condemning God that a lot of religions, I feel like, like, portray. He was, like, my best friend.
Yeah.
You know? And he just helped me through, like, so much, like, shit I was going through. And it was great. And, like, through that, like, I met an amazing, like, group of, like, community, like, a bunch of friends that, like, ended up becoming a community. And, like, for people who know me in high school and, like, grew up with me, like, I was a little crazy, you know, like, the person at the club, like, twerking, you know, like, you know, just being like that. And in that transformation, like, I was going to church like 4 times a week.
Yeah.
You know, like, just doing life every day, talking to God every day. And I enjoyed it. And it, like, brought me so much joy. And then during this whole part of LA, I got to a place where I was, like, so happy.
Uh-huh.
Like, I had an amazing group of friends in LA, amazing group of friends in Vegas. My family was close by. I was making good money, so I wasn't, like, poor, you know, at, like, at that moment. And out of the blue one day, I'm, like, with my best friend, Eric, and we're in a car at Starbucks, and we're, like, pulling out, and we stop at the light, and I feel God, like, talk to me in my heart, and he's, like, I want you to sell everything you have and, like, move to New York.
And it was did you do that?
Well, yeah, of course. Well, I thought about it
at
first.
Did you sell everything you have?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Like, because I thought about it at first, and I was, like, yo, Eric, like, I don't know. God just told me to do this, and I think it's kind of crazy.
And it's a little scary because New York is miles and miles away.
Uh-huh. Across the country.
Across the country, pretty much, from Vegas and LA.
No, really, though. And it was, like, one of the first times in my life where I felt like I had my shit together.
Right.
You know? Like, I had, like, a great group of friends. Like, I had stopped, like, the crazy drinking, sleeping around, you know, like, all that stuff. And I was actually starting to feel better, you know, like, emotionally, you know?
You felt more present in life, pretty much. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I was, like, I prayed on it for a little bit. I was, like, I don't know, this is me being, like, too radical. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I was, like, this is, like, it's crazy.
Is this just a move that you think you need to do, or is it a move that you really needed to do? Mm-hmm. You just were very unsure at the time.
Really, though.
Yeah.
So I prayed on it, and then I came to the conclusion. I was like, I'm going to move to New York because I know that God will continue to bless me if I stay in LA, and I'll still, my family here will grow. The opportunities, I know that he'll give me them here, and he'll make sure that I have fruit here.
Right.
But if I don't move to New York, then I'll be missing out on a whole journey that he had, like, set up for me.
That he has planned for you, right.
You know? So I was like, fuck it. Let's do it. You know?
Yeah.
And I got my house taken care of. I got my friend Colin to, like, move into my bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure I was okay with Grace. We took care of my car with, like, my grandparents in Vegas. Mm-hmm. And 2 weeks after that, I was flying.
To New York.
To New York. Mm-hmm. You know, I, like, packed all my stuff. I sent it all through FedEx to my next place.
Yeah.
And I was like, let's go to New York. But before I went, I asked God for 3 things.
What was that?
I said, I was like, God, I'm going to listen to you, but I need you to give me 3 things. I was like, I need you to give me 3 things. I need you to give me a church that I could call home. I need you to give me a place where I could rest that I could call home.
Yeah.
And I need you to bless me with a group of, like, a community, a group of people that I could call my family.
I like that you said that. And I like that what you asked for wasn't, like, material things or like you didn't ask for things that weren't unrealistic. And I feel like whenever people, you know, seek into God or, like, try to ask for certain things in their life, they ask for the most unrealistic things, you know?
No, I feel that.
So I feel like you asking him for things that are realistic and that he can provide, or just, like, guide you to a great community, a home to sleep in, and a church that you can call your own. I think that's, like, great.
Mm-hmm. No, thanks, Bill.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, because it was just, like, I wasn't expecting to be rich, you know, like, when I got there or anything. Like,
obviously, and did you visit New York before you actually moved, or was that the first time you ever been in New York?
I went twice before.
Okay. So you had an idea of what it would be like.
Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I didn't like it.
Really?
The first 2 times I went.
Okay.
Well, because I experienced, like, Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot different to when I moved to Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And Brooklyn felt a lot more homey.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I told God, I was like, I need those 3 things. And I felt him say, like, I'm going to give you those. Like, it felt, like, reassured.
Right.
You know? So I packed my stuff. I went to New York. And everything how I planned it was going to go, like,
it
didn't
went.
Go.
Oh, no. Okay.
And it was, like, kind of nuts because it really, like, shook me for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I went looking for, like, different churches, and I just wasn't finding one at all.
The church for you?
No, really. Well, because for me, my church in LA was so amazing. Like, they were, like, super accepting. And
was that the only location? Like, they didn't have any locations in other states? Or
They did, but it was different.
Okay.
Like, the East Coast had a very different church environment, you know? And I don't know, maybe it just was, like, my community in L.A.
What you were just used to.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the people that you were around. Cause that's just, essentially, that's what you love to go back to.
No, really, right? Though.
The environment and the positive reinforcements that you're around.
Uh-huh. And it was more like the people. Because, like,
yeah.
Church, you could do it in your home. You could do it in a driveway, in a car, you know?
It could be religious or spiritual.
Exactly, yeah. You know? And it's church is the people that you have around you, you know? And it was just the people were a lot different.
Yeah.
And I was, like, looking for a church family. And it was hard because, like, my community in L.A. was, like, super accepting.
Yeah.
And they never, ever brought up my sexuality as something that was, like, condemned or something I was going to go to hell for it or anything. And when I got to New York, I tried out a bunch of churches. And there was one that I loved. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, shoot, I think this is going to be, like, the church for me. Because I walked in and everybody was extremely nice.
Yeah.
And then we worshiped together. And, like, it was incredible. Like, I felt God with me. And right after we finished worshiping, we're, like, sitting there and the pastor comes up. And during this time is when gay marriage was passed in the U.S. And literally not, like, even a minute into his sermon, he says that gay people are the downfall of America and that we can't let them, in like, invade our government or our churches.
So what did you do when he said that? Did you get up and leave or were you just
in
a state of shock?
I was in a state of shock because one, I didn't expect him to say that.
Right.
And then I didn't expect the reaction from the crowd. Because
was it a positive reaction of them supporting his message or a negative reaction where they did not agree at all?
Oh, it was completely positive.
Oh, wow.
Like, I was, before this whole thing, like, when I first arrived, these people were, like, shaking my hands, saying, like, oh, we're so happy you're here, like, embracing me, you know? And right when he said that, like, this is an auditorium of probably, like, 1,000 people.
Yeah.
Like, once he said that, they were standing up and cheering and clapping. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, this.
These people just shook my hand and said how proud that you were there.
Uh-huh. And happy that I, like, came to this church and all
right.
that. And I was like, this doesn't seem
right at all,
you know? Like, I had so many conversations with God and, like, of course, I felt like when I was doing something wrong, you know, like he would tell me like, hey, this is wrong. Jimmy, you shouldn't be doing this. But never did I feel condemned for being like who I was, you know.
Right.
And in that moment, I just felt like this group of people who were supposedly following the word of God, you know, were literally throwing stones at
like, you.
Exactly. Being like, you're 100% wrong. You don't belong here.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're the downfall of America, and you're going to be the downfall of our church.
Right.
If you stay here, you know, and are who you are. So after that, I got really discouraged.
And did you just leave?
I did. Well, I waited for the sermon to be over because
you just didn't want to, like, make a scene or just be that person.
Exactly. And I just kind of felt, like, defeated, and I was pretty alone at that time in New York. So I was like, we're going to sit through this sermon and whatever. But I was, like, pissed.
Right.
And like, I got, you know?
Okay.
You told me you were gonna bless this, and like, all I've really felt since I've been out here has been like negativity in church, you know? And that was just like, that was the thing. I was almost homeless for a minute, and I pretty much was for like a second, you know? Because like, during this whole time, I was staying with a friend that I met in Miami. I really didn't even know him that well. He was just like, hey, if you need a place to crash while you look for a place, you can stay with me.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, sure. And it already had been like a month. And I told myself like, by the end of the month, I needed to move out.
You'd find a place.
Yeah. And I already felt like I was like overstaying my welcome there. And so I found this little place. There was like this weird housing group of thing where you apply for a room and then they put four random people together. And like, they put you in a place.
Yeah.
So I ended up finding a little room in this apartment, and the day before we're supposed to move in, at like 6 a.m, the guy who got us in there, the landlord, he sends me a message and he's like, hey, you can't move in tomorrow because these European guys that were like looking at the apartment as well want to buy the entire floor, and we're going to end up giving it to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just like, oh, snap. Like, I already told this guy I was moving out.
Mm-hmm.
And what am I supposed to do?
Where am I supposed to go?
Mm-hmm. So I was feeling like super discouraged. My money was like running out, you know? So I was like, I don't know how I'm gonna do this. And then this one guy that I met, his name is Brandon. He was a videographer, and we ended up connecting over his work prior to me moving to New York. We ended up setting up a meeting and being like, oh, let's meet when I get out there. And we ended up getting really close. Like, we were hanging out a lot. And literally an hour after I got that message, Brandon writes me, and he's like, hey, my roommate just told me he's moving out. Would you want to move in like 5 days? And I told him, I was like, well, if I could sleep on your floor for the next 5 days, like, I'll move in. You know? And he was like, sure, come over. You know? So that was like a blessing.
Yeah.
In itself. Because I was like literally about to be homeless. And then in almost like an instant, you know, like, I had a place to sleep. You know? And so, yeah, Brandon took me in. I was sleeping on his floor for like 5 days. And nothing, because he was waiting for the other roommate to move out. And his other roommate moved out. And then I went to IKEA. I bought a bunk bed because, like, the New York housing situation is not plentiful. It's just not, you know?
No, yeah.
They're small there. So I got a bunk bed. And I set up the whole room. And I, like, built the bunk bed by myself. It literally took me, like, 8 hours. And I finally built it. I put the mattress there. And I was, like, exhausted. And Brandon wasn't home. He was, like, working or something. And I went, and after the day, I went up there into my bunk bed, and I laid, and I was, like, laying with, like, my head looking over the side of the bed. And I was, like, looking at the floor, and then, like, I don't know, God spoke to me again in that moment. And he's, like, don't lose faith in me.
Right.
You know? Because, like, just as you were sleeping on the floor 5 days ago, I brought you feet above it. Yeah. You know? And that was, like,
that was just like another,
it was another moment, you know, because it was like, and it sounds so dumb because I wasn't like, it wasn't a lot of money or anything, but it was like the first time I was like truly alone in a place. And like to hear that and be like, okay, he hasn't like completely like left me, even though I couldn't find like a church. That was like a big moment. But then that little moment didn't last long because I was like looking for a job and I couldn't find a job. And I needed to have, like, Brandon's rent for, like, the next month.
Right.
Like, ASAP. And I was like, how am I going to, like, make this happen? You know? Because, like, I'm applying all these places. Like, nothing is falling through.
Right.
Whatever. And, like, I needed to have his rent in, like, a week. And let me tell you, I was busting my ass for a place. Like, it was, like, applications every day, going to all these different stores, nothing. And then that week came up, and then I went to church that night because I was like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
I have, like, no money. Like, Brandon has me in his house. You know, like, what am I going to do? I asked my family. My family couldn't help me. So I was like, I was at church.
You were pretty much stuck.
Yeah. And I was just like, you know what? I think it's time to, like, move back home. You know, I was like, you gave it a shot. You know,
so far
haven't, like, panned out. And, like, thankfully, I know that my friends and my family back home, like, I would, like, have my back, and I can move back and get back on my feet, and then we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So I texted Brandon after I left church, and I was like, hey, boo, we need to talk when we get home. Like, will you be home tonight? He's like, yeah, I'll be here, whatever. And so I went home, and he, like, made dinner and stuff, and we're, like, sitting in the kitchen, and we're, like, talking. And he's like, so what do you want to talk about? And I was like, hey, so I want to be really transparent with you. Like, I've been, like, busting my ass trying to get a job. I haven't been able to find one. I don't think I'm going to have the money for the next month's rent. I'll help you find a new roommate, but I think I'm going to move back home.
Yeah.
You know? And we sat there, and he was like, you know what? Like, keep looking for a job. I have money in my savings. Like, I'll take care of next month's rent.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, you just figure it out, and you pay me back, like, when you have the chance.
Right.
You know? And at that moment, I was like, wow. You know?
Like, I have to stay here.
Uh-huh. Well, I was, like, blown away that his generosity.
Yeah.
For somebody that he, like, barely knew. And that was insane. You know, it was like, I actually have, like, a friend out here who, like, is looking out for me.
Yeah.
And then, like, shortly after that, I got, like, 3 jobs. I was, like, working at, like, a bike rental place in, like, Park Slope, and a pizza shop, and, like, a candy store in Manhattan. And finally, after that, I started to, like...
It's funny how sometimes life kind of just works out on its own. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to go all through all of those, like, curbs to finally... Like, you go through all these different types of negatives to finally be at peace. Mm-hmm. And then it's just, like, a rotation.
Yeah.
Essentially. With everything that you've shared so far, how has your mental health been affected by all of this? Because mm-hmm. I feel like so far has been so heavy, and, you know, you have seen either so many colors or even the darkness in your life with this story that you shared so far. So how has your mental health been affected?
Well, definitely I feel like it started at an early age. Uh-huh. You know, is when I started to notice that, like, I was pretty sad, you mm-hmm. know? And I remember being, like, in, like, second or third grade, and I was, like, staying in my mom's house. And my mom's house to me was a little bit more, like, unstable
yeah.
at that moment. And I remember my grandmother's always, like, taking care of me. And when I was in third grade, my great-great-grandmother passed away.
Yeah.
And I remember that after that, I would, like, be at my mom's house, and I hate using this word, but I really hated being over there.
Okay.
Just because, like, she wasn't home, and it was just, like, me and my brother a lot, and I was just like, why do I want to be here when I could just be at my grandmother's house?
Right.
You know? And then after I realized that, like, death is a part of life, you know, I was like, oh my god, they're gonna die, and I'm not gonna be able to be over there.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, all this time I'm wasting being
just
alone
being here. Right.
You know? So I started noticing, like, little things like that. And then everything was, like, pretty chill in, like, my childhood. Like, I never really noticed anything until I started getting into, like, dating,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then I was from, like, how you said earlier, like, I had this, like, personality that was very, like, robust and, like, vibrant. Like, I was very insecure mm-hmm. at the same time. And whenever I would, like, start to, like, fall for a guy, you know, or anything like that, I always kind of second guessed who I was mm-hmm. and kind of put them on a pedestal as if, like, if they wanted me to be around, I was important enough to be around, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know if that stems from, like, earlier on when, like, my parents, like, divorced, and it was like I saw that whole thing happen.
Kind of like an abandonment.
Exactly.
Issue.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so I kind of always wanted just somebody, like, to be there mm-hmm. for me, you know? And then that took me through a whole slew of just, like, horrible guys
yeah.
dating. Like, guys that weren't out of the closet and not secure with themselves. So they took out any aggression they had.
You were just trying to find love in different places.
The wrong places,
uh-huh. right.
And that kind of stuck around with me even till now.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, like, now I'm finally actually starting to work through that a little bit.
Yeah.
But that's when I first started to feel, like, depression.
Yeah.
Start to peek its head around. And I was just like, oh, like, that's when, like, the insecurities and everything popped up, because I was like, oh, what if, like, nobody really wants me? You know, like, what? And you know what? The more I talk with my therapist and stuff like that, because it is something that I've, like, started to introduce into my life,
mm-hmm.
is, like, therapy and sobriety and everything. It's like, those were thoughts that even sometimes even, like, rear up their head now. But it's like, are you good enough to be wanted and loved and, like, cared for, you know?
I feel like a lot of people go through that same, like, thought
mm-hmm.
from time to time. Maybe not every day. Some people may go through that thought every day. However, I think it's just what makes us human, really,
uh-huh.
is whenever there is a negative situation that we're trying to overcome in our life or that we are living through, we always go back to that statement of, am I good enough?
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, it is... that you are good enough, really, because eventually you will overcome, you know?
No, 100%. And no, and I agree with that. And I think I figured out the key to that.
And what is that?
That is communication.
100%.
You know, like, because for so long,
mm-hmm.
I, like, kept my darkness to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, I can't share these insecurities because people are going to think I'm weird, or it's going to think it's too heavy. And if I share it, they're not going to want to be around me.
Right. And, I mean, you're not the only person that thinks that way.
100%. You know? And it's like, you don't really, like, understand that or figure that out.
Until you start talking to someone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, even in a group of friends like ours,
Yeah.
We were all so close, but nobody was talking about any the negative of that.
Or like what you were going through in your personal life.
100%.
Or what we're all going through in our personal lives. Mm-hmm.
Like I even get shocked like daily when sometimes when we sit around and talk about what life and like what we've gone through.
Right.
Like I'm blown away with what half of you guys have gone through because we just never talked about it.
Right.
You know? So
we're also blinded by the fun and all the positive reinforcements that we have, really. Mm-hmm.
No, yeah. So it's like communication, I think, is like key. And like really like telling yourself like constantly, you know,
that you're going to be okay.
Yeah, 100%. You know, because I feel like it's so easy to get into a place where you're just like, damn, like this is never going to get better.
Negative like, and stuck.
Yeah, with whether it's like work, personal growth, like your own goals or expectations over mm-hmm. your life, you know? And it's just like it's so easy to get stuck
in the same currents of events that you go through every day, you know?
Yeah.
So are there any situations that bring you back to the past, and how do you work through situations that do bring you back to the past?
Mm-hmm.
Like little moments that you like that occur.
There's been like a couple things, okay. You know, it's sometimes two of the big ones is either family mm-hmm. or like love.
Okay.
Which are two ones that I feel like
are very common.
Common. Like they'll take me back and they'll put me in a place where I'm like super anxious, depressed and stuff like that. You know, yeah. Like about a year ago. When I decided to go sober, it's a little bit before that. Like I was like coming home, and I was just seeing my family like evolve.
Yeah.
My grandmother was getting like really sick. The Alzheimer's was like taking over, and it's just like Alzheimer's is like crippling. You know, like it doesn't get better; it mm-hmm. just like gets worse.
Right.
And my grandmother, who was like the glue of our family, was starting to diminish, and also the relationships that I saw in my family growing up were diminishing as well.
Because of the Alzheimer's.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And now I look back and it's like everybody is mourning and managing the best they can, mm-hmm. you know? But back then I didn't see that. And me personally, I was the one who like ran away.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, well, I'm focusing on my job and my career, so I have to focus on my future. And that was a disguise to, I need to get away from this because this is killing me.
Right.
You know? And so I would come back home. And then when I would come back home, I would, like, clean their house and, like, go over there, like, wash her hair, bathe her, all this stuff. And I would be pissed because I would see how other people weren't there, you know? And I wasn't taking into account that they have a full-fledged family with kids. They have work. They have everything like going on. They have bills that they have to pay. They have their own hardships, you know? And at that, on top of all that, they're also mourning my grandmother as well. Like, I'm not the only one hurting here, you know? Yeah. But I was like viewing it through a very narrow lens. And mm-hmm. I was just like, this family is like not what it used to be. You guys don't care, you know? So I got really angry with my family mm-hmm. for a minute. And when the last time I came before I started sobriety, I was, like, coming back home and people weren't, like, going out of their way to, like, visit or meet up. And I was just like, you know what? I'm not coming back home anymore. Mm-hmm. I was like, there's really nothing calling me over there. It hurts me more to go back than to actually, like, stay here, yeah. you know? So I'm just, like, not going to come back to Vegas, like, anymore. Maybe I'll come back to see my friends and my family if I feel like it, but I don't really care mm-hmm. to go back. And shortly after that, I was, like, going through sobriety. And when I started digging into everything with my therapist, I was like, hell no. I don't want to go back. Mm-hmm. You know, like dealing with this and not having the escape of, like, partying or, like, sleeping around or anything and, like, dealing with it. I was like, I definitely don't want to go back. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's going to hurt way more this time.
Right.
So for a long time, I was like, I won't come back home. Because, like, the family was, like, such a trigger for me that I was, like, if I have to face it and see how bad it gets, you know, the only person I can blame, because before I was blaming my family. Mm-hmm. They weren't doing their part on taking care of her, you know? Now, being, like, sober and seeing it from a wider lens and, like, actually looking at myself, I was like, the only person you have to blame is yourself. You know, like, you ran away. Yeah. You didn't stay to take care of her. You know? Mm-hmm. So the family was a big trigger for me.
Yeah.
You know? But then, and then love is also another one. Like, I was, like, looking for somebody to fill that void.
Yeah.
For, like, my grandma. And make it feel as if, like, I was good enough to be loved because I had a lot of guilt of leaving my grandmother, of when I was a kid being like, well, if my parents split up and I'm not good enough to stay here, like, who's going to be there for me? Going to want me enough? Because, like, I viewed it as, like, my grandmother wanted me enough, so I wanted to be there. And then, like, the Alzheimer's hit, and it's like, she's gone. So all the other grandparents are going to be gone soon. Who is going to be there for me?
For you.
You know?
Who's going to be there to love you?
Exactly. So that took me down a whole road of, like, unhealthy dating. Yeah. You know? And just, like, dating people because I wanted company, not because I wanted a companion.
Yeah.
You know? And it was,
you wanted,
like,
company, and you wanted to feel that short period of love.
Exactly. But it wasn't real.
But it wasn't real love.
No.
No.
So it was, like, I was settling for guys who were, like, drug addicts and, like, doing a bunch of shit that I really didn't agree with.
That you
know? You
shouldn't have never gotten yourself involved with.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, it was, like, those were, like, the two biggest things, you know? Mm-hmm. But thankfully, like, when I did become sober, that's a whole story in itself. But when I became sober, I was like, Jimmy, I personally am not happy with how my life has gone.
Yeah.
And I had been traveling a lot, sleeping around. Full disclosure, like, I was, like, got chlamydia twice. Mm-hmm. And it was just, like, that was, like, that opened my eyes to the situation. Mm-hmm. I was, like, literally being so reckless because it was after my last relationship. I was, like, hey, this feels real to me. You know, like, this is going to be it. Like, I'm finally going to have, like, the picture perfect life.
You thought that you're finally going to be loved the way you wanted to be loved.
Exactly.
Or the way that you thought you should be loved.
Exactly. So I was like, this is going to be it. Like, he has his shit together. He's not out there doing a bunch of drugs or sleeping uh-huh. around. Like this is the life that I want. I want the life that, like, my grandmother and my grandfather had. Mm-hmm. And I thought this was it for me, you know? And I wasn't even in love with him. I just liked the idea, you know?
The idea that you played in your head.
Exactly. And it wasn't real. It was just, like, it was, like, the fantasy of that. Uh-huh. So when he broke up with me, I was, like, devastated. And I was, like, depressed for a couple months. And there came a point where I was, like, okay, you're not going to be depressed anymore. You're going to live, like, your best life. Like, what do you want to, like, check off that list?
Yeah.
And I was, like, okay, we're going to move to London. And you're going to just experience whatever you want. Mm-hmm. So what happened during that time was my living my best life was just a disguise for my depression mm-hmm. to become into just reckless behavior, you know?
You were running away again.
Again, you know? And I was just, like, drinking a shit ton, having sex with, like, random guys, not using protection. And it got to the point where I got chlamydia twice. And I was just like, Jimmy, this isn't you.
Right.
You know, like, you're not this person. It doesn't make you happy. Like, what are you doing? You know? Mm-hmm. So there was this one night, I remember I, like, was smoking every night before I went to bed. And I smoked, and, like, during this time, every time I smoked, I would get anxiety.
Yeah.
But this last time I smoked, it was, like, I smoked and I sat there, and I had started to have, like, a panic attack. And I was like, I don't know what's going on with you, but you got to get your shit together.
Yeah.
You know, like, I never used hard drugs or anything. It was mainly, like, drinking and, like, sleeping around and, like, smoking weed. But I was like, are you an alcoholic? Like, are you a sex addict? Like, what the fuck is going on? Because I don't even recognize you at this point, you know? So I called my friend Brandon, and I was like, hey, can we talk upstairs? Because he lived next door. And we went upstairs, and I just, like, bared my, like, soul out to him. I was like, I don't know what's wrong, but a change needs to happen, you know? And at the end of that conversation, I was like, I'm going to start therapy. I'm gonna cut off, like, drinking and smoking, like, cold turkey, and I'm gonna be celibate. Mm-hmm. Like, I need to, like, figure my shit out, because, like, if it hasn't worked up to this point, you know?
Something's going wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I need to try it the other way. Mm-hmm. I need to try it sober. I need to try it celibate. And I need to see if that's going to, like, work for me, you know? And so I told myself, all right, we're going to start therapy, and we're going to cut all that shit out. And it was hard at first. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, like, I was going through the motions at first. And, I wasn't in love with fashion anymore. I didn't want to, like, do any photo shoots. I didn't want to, like, really be involved in anything.
Do you think, like, a lot of that has something to do with just, like, what was going on in your personal life?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
It was, like, everything coming together. It was, like, the ex-boyfriend not wanting me, and me, this fantasy being crushed.
Uh-huh.
And feeling like, damn, this is never going to happen for you because you're this kind of person, mm-hmm. you know? Or my grandmother's getting worse, and I don't want to go see my family anymore. You know? Like, that was a huge pillar that, like, kept me up, you know? And I was, like, totally, like, doing away with it. I didn't want to deal with it anymore.
Uh-huh.
So it was just a lot. It was just, like, a lot was coming together. And I wasn't in love with fashion because I wasn't in love with myself. So I wasn't enjoying my hobbies or anything. And, yeah, so I started sobriety. And at first, it was hard because I just felt weird mm-hmm. and a lot of anger towards everybody, mm-hmm. you know? And I wasn't communicating. And that's why I said, like, I feel like the key is communication, you know? Because you feel so alone and isolated, but it's because you kind of put yourself in that box.
In that situation, and you're not really speaking to others who
exactly.
Really, when you talk to someone, just like when you go to your therapist, you talk to that person, you mm-hmm. spill your entire heart out, you spill your entire life out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I mean, I guess you can see, like, how difficult it can be to be talking to someone who you're really close to because you don't really want to be judged by your close friend or just a friend, mm-hmm. you know? So I feel like that's why people go to therapists, because they're pretty much strangers.
Uh-huh.
And they're designed to not judge.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. But, like, well, I also think we're blessed. We have such an amazing group of friends, you know? And it's like, during this whole process, I realized, why wasn't I doing that with you guys?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because, like,
it's hard.
It is hard.
Yeah.
It is. But I feel like if you really want to work on yourself, it takes work. And it takes going through the muck and the dirt of it.
Right.
And it takes, like, being, like, vulnerable with your friends. It
takes opening up and being vulnerable, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like I said, it's hard sometimes to, like, it's really hard to talk to your close friends about certain things, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know that a lot of people have that type of, like, problem or issue where they don't really open up to their close friends because that's just not what they're used to, unless they are used to talking about all the situations that they've had to overcome.
Mm-hmm. No, I feel that.
So where do you think you are now in your life?
Definitely a lot happier.
Okay.
Like, not saying that everything has, like, been taken care of, you know? Like, we put like a pretty bow on it, and now my life is, like, peachy.
Yeah.
You know?
Because I'm sure there are some more things in life that you will have to, like, overcome, mm-hmm. you know?
No, for sure. But it's, like, sobriety has helped.
Okay.
Just because, well, my tendency is to run away.
Mm-hmm.
Alcohol, weed, you know, those were things that were, like, okay, I feel uncomfortable.
That
I'm going to,
like,
check
scapegoat.
Out. Mm-hmm. I'm going to check out real quick. And it wasn't, like, I was drinking, like, during the day or like, abusing it that way. It mm-hmm. was, like, I'm abusing it by, like, oh, tonight I feel weird. I'm going to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like society breeds that a little bit.
Okay.
You know? Like, society tells everybody, like, oh, if you're having a shitty day, go to the bar and have a drink. You're going to be fine.
You it's know? Okay.
Or, like, okay, it's somebody's birthday. We got to celebrate.
Yeah.
You know, like, let's go drinking. You know? And it's always, like, a very drink-heavy mentality. If, mm-hmm. like, you know, if shit's not going right, let's drink. If shit's going great, let's drink. If it's a holiday, let's drink. If it's a weekend, well, it's a weekend, let's drink.
Everything just goes back to let's drink, let's celebrate.
Exactly. And you don't really – it doesn't really, like, promote, like, being, like, present. It's just like, let's get fucked up, you know? Like, that's what is promoting,
party, yeah.
You know,
let's escape pretty
exactly
much.
So it took me a minute to, like, understand that I didn't really, like, need that
mm-hmm.
to really, like, be present and still have fun,
mm-hmm.
you know? So yeah, getting, like, over that, but it's, like, weird still, like, mm-hmm. I'm still, like, discovering myself dating wise and accepting myself for, like, who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have a story, kinda. So whatever, I was talking to this one guy. I didn't even really like him
uh-huh.
when we were like talking, because he was like he had like this like dependency on pills and like was doing pills at his job and everything. And I was like, I'm not vibing
you
with this guy.
You still want to like get involved in something like that.
But he was like, every time I'd hit him up, he's like, oh yeah, come over, come kick it. So I was like, okay, I'll keep him around, you know? And then I ended up catching like little feelings, whatever. Mm-hmm. And one day he was like, hey, can we go talk at a bar? And I was like, sure. And like, he pretty much broke up with me. Well, we weren't really together, but he like ended it.
Yeah.
And he was just like, you're so needy. I just can't do it, you
oh,
know?
No.
And I hated that.
Yeah.
For a second.
Like, no one wants to be called needy.
Exactly. But you know what? And then I was talking to my friend Brandon, and he was like, but you are kind of needy. And I was like, ew, okay.
But how?
Well, I need love.
Yeah.
You know, like, I need affection.
I mean, everyone needs love.
No, for sure.
And I think that everyone has their own definition of what needy is,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I think everyone, honestly, at the end of the day, everyone wants to be loved. Everyone wants to be loved. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And it's like, I'm not necessarily saying that you need to be loved. However, everyone wants to be loved.
Mm-hmm.
And if being needy is wanting someone to show you X amount of affection, then it is what it is. You know what I mean?
No, yeah. And I stopped viewing it as like a negative.
Right.
Like, I'm just like, that's a part of Jimmy. And I kind of love that about Jimmy, you know? And if you like it, you like it. What's up? And if you don't, then
move
that's
along.
It. Move along.
Right.
You know? So to anybody else that's needy out there, keep being needy and keep needing. Because someone's going to meet you there,
just
you know?
Just don't be excessive. Like Jimmy.
What's that?
I'm just kidding. But okay, before we wrap things up here, I do have one last question to ask you.
Okay.
If you can tell your younger self a message, what would you say?
I would tell him not to ramble so much on Kim's podcast.
Oh my God.
No.
What would you say? I feel like you've gone through so much, and I mean, you've shared so much with mm-hmm. us, you know?
I think I would tell him, like, don't think that people have expectations
mm-hmm.
over what makes you a good person
right.
or valid, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, for so long, I thought my grandmother wanted me to be this, like, perfect, like, kid with no flaws, you know? And it kind of like stressed me out because I was always like, I'm not living up to what her expectation is of me.
Yeah.
You know? And especially after she got Alzheimer's, it was like, I'll never know exactly what the, like, if I met her expectations mm-hmm. or not, you know? So it would just be like, just live your life, be happy, you know, and love the best that you can, because that's all anybody wants.
Right.
Like, just be you.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you're gonna like do just fine. So
that's a good message.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, if only we can go back, or if only someone could give us like that message at a young age, I feel that'd be so nice. But I guess that's like the beauty of life, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you get to learn, you get to see what you go through, and then you get to look back and maybe replay of how life should have played out, or just honestly and be accepting of what happened
mm-hmm.
and move forward.
No, yeah, because like, it's all those little experiences that like make you who you are.
Right.
So if you didn't go through anything, like,
would you be the same person as you are?
Exactly.
Right.
You know, and it's like all those little things that like all those little trials and tribulations that like life throws at you make you the person who you are and the person that people love to see.
Right.
You know, and love to like be with and love to surround themselves with. The good and the negative,
right?
You know, because like there's beauty and love in both, you know.
Right.
So yeah.
Yeah. No, I love that. Thank you, Jimmy.
You're welcome, Kim.
That you had a lot for us today, which I really appreciate. Don't be sorry. It was great, and I'm sure everyone that is listening is going to feel for you. And you know what? Maybe even hit home for them because they're maybe going through a similar situation.
Mm-hmm.
So before we end here, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you on social media and maybe a website and where they can find your book.
Oh, okay, cute. Thanks, Kim.
Yeah.
Thank you for the little shout out. You can find me on social media at Jimmy, J-I-M-I underscore U-R-Q-U-I-A-G-A. And you could also follow my drag account at Miss Lady, M-I-S-S-L-E-I-D-Y underscore official. And if you'd like to check out Chronicles, The Awakening, Volume 1, go to www.chroniclesbook.co and you could purchase a book there. Please support, and we'll be having volume 2 coming out next year.
Yay. Thank you so much, Jimmy.
Thanks, Kim. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you Bubblegum Kim podcast listeners enjoyed what you heard today, don't forget to like, rate, and tell a friend about Bubblegum Kim podcasts. If you or someone you know is feeling depressed, needs help, or is feeling suicidal, please reach out and speak up. Text HOME to 741741. A 24/7 support at your fingertips with the crisis text line. Or call the National Suicidal Prevention Hotline at 1-800-273-8255. Know that you are never alone and that there will always be someone out there willing to help you.